fighting for America.
You've got tremendous love for this country, Kevin, and the people of Idaho. And anybody that has had a chance to be able to get to know you, even just listening to you on the radio, knows you got a heart of gold, man. And we all appreciate that.
Fighting for Idaho.
Hey, thanks again, Kevin, and thanks to the audio. You know, we appreciate you and the community, obviously. Appreciate you guys all the time. I'm just another one.
Fighting for you.
Everybody isn't Kevin Miller, and I'm not just saying this. I said this behind your back. You are one of the best in the entire country. I know that for a fact. But you are an exception, sadly, a big exception to what our industry has become.
Boise's Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the morning.
Well, Heidi, the check's in the mail for that one.
On 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
KIDO, Kevin Miller in the morning. Thank you all for joining us. Phone numbers are 580-5436, 580-KIDO. We're very blessed, we're very honored to have the Chief Executive Officer for the John Birch Society, Mr. Arthur Thompson, with us. Mr. Thompson, thank you for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure.
So you're getting ready to come to town here Wednesday, March 18th at 7 o'clock at the Boise Convention Center. What's that about?
Well, I'm giving a talk on what is called free trade. Actually, it's not free. It's not trade. It's a package deal that everybody falls for. First of all, let me say up front, we are not opposed to trade, nor are we opposed to free trade. But a lot of people, you know, we've bought products over the years based on the advertisement and what's on the package, and we get it home and it isn't quite what we thought we were buying. And it's the same with politicians. You know, we vote for individuals based on the rhetoric, and then we find out, well, wait a minute, that isn't exactly what we voted for. And that's what it is with these free trade packages that are coming down the road soon into the Congress of the United States. They're labeled free trade in the rhetoric, but the titles tell us everything that we need to know, and that is the Trans-Pacific partnerships and the transatlantic partnerships. They're known for that word, partnership. Now, partnership in a commercial enterprise means merger. It also means that when you're talking about countries. And that's the thing that a lot of people don't understand. If you read the pronouncements out of the White House and in the articles from the promoters of these partnerships, you will find that they are talking about economic integration. Now, integration, economic integration is not trade. Economic integration is the merger of our economies. Now, that leads to larger government, and it has to be monitored by an international body. In other words, we cannot unilaterally make decisions any longer as an independent American people. So that is what is going on. These partnerships are about 20% trade and about 80% of imposing new regulations on the environment, on businesses, on banking, on healthcare, so on and so forth, all to be monitored by international courts and an international body.
Why are we betraying the American worker here at 580KIDO, sir? Why are we doing all these international treaties and moving the job somewhere else?
Well, there are a number of reasons, but the primary one is that there is a coterie of individuals who want us to become involved in an international government. And this is just one of the schemes that they're using because it sells well with the average businessman. He thinks, oh, wow, good, I can have trade, I can make money, and it'll benefit everybody. A lot of people are told it'll bring us more jobs, but it has never brought us more jobs. We've lost millions of jobs. But the primary purpose behind it is to become part of a socialist one-world government. Now, I pose the question to your listeners. Is our government moving towards socialism? Now, I've never found anybody that said no. Nobody. Even the socialists agree. They just disagree as to how fast it's moving. But if our government is moving us towards socialism, why in the world would we think that their foreign policy is any different? It's the same people implementing both domestic and foreign policy. And we are also forming these treaties That's basically what they are. They don't call them treaties, but because and I'll explain why in a minute. But they are calling these things partnerships, and they are moving us towards socialism internationally. That's the bottom line. Now, a lot of people don't like to believe in conspiracies and all the rest of it. But you know something? People make things happen. People dream up ideas. People finance their ideas. People organize their ideas. If these ideas are to the detriment of the people and done in secret, or at least to the point of where they do not understand what is going on, then that in and of itself is a definition of a conspiracy. And that's what's happening here. Now, we're entering into these agreements with socialist nations, even communist nations. That's the ultimate aim. And the thing is that why in the world would a socialist nation want to be involved in free enterprise? They don't believe in free enterprise. So as the American people think of free trade, it's impossible when you're dealing with these socialist nations, just the way it is.
Arthur Thompson with us, Chief Executive Officer for the John Birch Society. Kevin Miller at 580KIDO. What do you say to people that are critics of JBS?
Get a life. In what, pardon my flippant answer, but in what way?
Well, they think, oh, conspiracies, the Trilateral Commission. No, I know you folks. You're good people. You care about the country, but you've heard these criticisms before.
Oh, sure. We're hearing them less and less, however. They do still throw out the term conspiracy theorists in order to get people thinking that we're paranoid. But the thing is that just as I've described, and let me quote Franklin Delano Roosevelt, he said nothing happens by accident in politics. If it happens, you can bet it was planned that way. Now, that's a paraphrasing of what he said. The thing is that, as I mentioned earlier, people do things. They change things. They plan things. There's nothing that happens unless somebody plans to have it happen, unless it's an automobile accident or something untoward like that. So anything that happens in politics has been planned that way. And that's the thing that they don't want the American people to understand. These things are not accidents. They don't enter bills and pass bills and formulate regulations and that sort of thing in the government unless somebody plans for those things to happen. Now, who are the individuals behind this planning? Well, what a lot of people don't know, and your listeners can go online and verify this immediately, look up Social Democrats in Congress, Social Democrats in Congress. You will see that at least 70 members of the Congress of the United States have outed themselves as part of the Socialist Internationale, because the Social Democrats are the official representatives to the Socialist Internationale. Now, these individuals, the socialists, have as a primary focus of their agenda a one-world government. And that means if they're promoting that in the Congress, they have become the domestic enemies of the Constitution of the United States, because one of the primary aspects of the Constitution is to maintain the independence of the American people. We cannot remain independent if we go into a socialist government, a socialist one-world government. Now, I know this is hard for maybe some of your listeners to understand and believe, but if they go to that website, just look it up on Google or whatever search engine that they use, Social Democrats in Congress, these are people that have admitted that they're part of the Socialist Internationale. So, you know, when it comes to conspiracies, a lot of people probably are hearing this for the first time. What, you mean to tell me that there are members of the Socialist Party in the Congress of the United States? Yes, there are. And if you haven't heard this before, ask yourself the question, why not? And the answer has to be is because, generally speaking, they don't want you to know about it. that constitutes at least somewhat of a conspiracy. So, yeah, we do believe in these things because they're right there when you know where to look.
580KIDO, as we continue on, are we moving towards the one-world government?
Well, yes, and part of this, my book explains a lot of it. It's called International Merger by Foreign Entanglements. You remember George Washington and Thomas Jefferson and many others all warned us against foreign entanglements. And that's really what these free trade treaties are, is they're foreign entanglements. They are not trade treaties in the sense of the average American, what he thinks of as free trade or a trade agreement. Because what it's setting up is more international controls under the United Nations. All of the treaties, by the way, and your listeners can look this up readily online, every treaty passed since the end of World War II has subordinated some part or all of our government under the United Nations. Because within the very first few paragraphs, sometimes it's buried in the middle of it, it will show that that this treaty or this agreement is under the jurisdiction of the United Nations Security Council and or General Assembly. And so gradually, it's like the story of Gulliver in Gulliver's Travels. The Lilliputians placed threads over which they, in their size, considered to be ropes, but in Gulliver's size, they were threads, placed them over his body as he was asleep until they had enough of them in place that when he woke up, they just jerked taut these threads and it pinned him to the ground. And that's what we see being done to the American body of people, are these threads being placed over us through a variety of things, just one of them, these free trade deals, that at some point in the future, there will be enough of them that we're pinned down, that we won't be able to make decisions as the American people anymore. We'll be beholden to an international body simply because of all these controls that have been laid on top of us, whether it's in the name of the environment, whether it's in the name of an outside terrorist threat. It doesn't matter what it is. Every one of these things is being used to place one or more of those threads over the body politic of the United States, leading toward total subversion and submersion into the United Nations.
Mr. Thompson, please stand by. More coming up next. Kevin Miller in the morning, 580KIDO. Time for traffic now. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, my friend.
Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning. It's good to visit with you. It's a great day.
Good morning, world. It's a brand new day.
Earning your trust every morning. Kevin Miller, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award. 580KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
580KIDO, good morning. Thank you for joining us. Kevin Miller in the morning. Mr. Arthur Thompson with us, Chief Executive Officer for the John Birch Society. Now, you're coming here March 18th. Is this your first time to Idaho?
No, I've been in and out of Idaho my whole life.
Really?
See, I came from the Northwest originally, and I lived in, born and raised in Seattle, and then I lived for 25 years in Spokane. And so even one of my daughters lives up north of Coeur d'Alene, so on and so forth. So I get in there once in a while.
I see. So you're pumped up about that. We'll talk about your speech in a minute. Let's get back to the idea of America's liberties, America's freedoms being taken away. Do you see that as a result of our trade with China, considering we become more and more indebted to the Chinese communist government?
Well, that's true in so many ways. That's a whole talk in itself, frankly. We have placed ourselves in a position of near fatality relative to China when it comes to being able to defend ourselves as a nation militarily. One of the things that the American people don't know about, and this is not just some fantasy dreamt up by the John Birch Society, this is information we've derived from military publications and everything else, 80% of the components of our weaponry that we make today comes from foreign sources, including China and Russia. Now, let that sink in for a moment. We may assemble the weaponry here, but the components, 80% of them, are foreign parts. This is particularly true in many of our smart weapons, you know, the smart bombs and so on and so forth. And we have also, due to our policies, diminished our capacity to produce steel and transferred it, for all practical purposes, that word is correct, transferred it to China. China today is the largest steel manufacturer in the world. We used to be. At the beginning of World War II, we were the largest steel manufacturer in the world. As a result of that and many other aspects of our economy, we were able to supply the Allies the wherewithal to defeat Germany and Japan, Hungary, Finland, all the rest of the countries that were part of the Axis, and just ship them planes and ships and engines, trucks. As a matter of fact, one of the things that you can make a case of is that Russia would not have been able to defeat the Nazis if it hadn't have been for the 2.5-ton trucks, the thousands, tens of thousands of them that we shipped to the Soviet Union. Never would have happened because they couldn't have maneuvered. They couldn't have, with their troops, gotten them into the battlefield and into other areas where they need to be relative to the various things that happen in shifts of front and so on and so forth. So we were able to do that. Today we can't. We don't have enough steel capacity to wage a world war in a prolonged capacity today. We don't have it. The Chinese do. And so that's just one little snippet of our trade policy with China. Now, let me give you another one. And this is even more insidious.
Now, before you get to that at 580KIDO, let me hit you with this. Why did we do that? Was it purely economics? Allegedly that, they can make it cheaper, then we could bring it back. I mean, this is our ability to protect ourselves.
Well, that's true. But, see, we're getting into an area now that takes an awful lot of study, but let me give it to you in one as short a synopsis as I can. For those of you who've read 1984 by George Orwell, you know that it was based on a plan to divide the world into three parts, but the three parts would actually be in league with one another. In other words, the anti-hero in the novel was Winston. And Winston was told by one of the leaders in the government that the inner party, as they called it, really ruled the world, and the inner party actually ruled over the three parts of the world, but the people didn't know it, because the people were put into constant war by those three governments in order to subjugate their own people. In the name of patriotism, in the name of winning the war, they would do just about anything. But what I'm getting at here is that there is an inner party that exists, and it works together in order to bring about a regionalization of the world as the interim step towards a one-world government. Now, part of that process is to make these three parts equal so that nobody can lord it over the other one. In other words, the inner party doesn't want another aspect of the inner party to win the war and then eliminate them so that they are the supreme leaders. Now, the thing is that in order to make us equal to the rest of the world, we have to subordinate our economy. We have to build up the other economies, such as Russia and China. And that, in a nutshell, is what has been going on. Now, I know it's awful hard for some people to believe this stuff, but believe me, this has been going on for a long time. We've been involved in researching this. In fact, there was just a book put out, and I wish I could remember its name, that documents this from the very documents of these people themselves, the Kissingers of the world, and those who opened up China, what their motivation really was. It was not because the American people could buy goods cheaper. It was to be able to homogenize the world as a stepping stone towards these three areas and ultimately into a one-world government. One of the things that people might want to read is a book like The Creature from Jekyll Island, for instance, gets into the economic aspects. Another one is Shadows of Power, which gets into what I a little bit more about what I've just been talking about, and shows the involvement of organizations like the Council on Foreign Relations and the Trilateral Commission, etc., that they really are moving us towards these things. They are very open about it within their internal publications, but it's not being told in the New York Times or the Spokane paper or the Seattle Times or the Wall Street Journal or anything else, but they do discuss it in print amongst themselves. And when you tap into that and then you realize that, oh my word, you get a real paradigm shift in your head that says, wait a minute, this is true. There are people who want a one world government, and they're doing everything they can, including trade or anything else, to move us in that direction.
Sure, Mr. Thompson. We'll get back to that in a minute. You're listening to Kevin Miller, 580KIDO.
Dave Ramsey, weekdays at noon. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
580KIDO, Kevin Miller in the morning, 580KIDO.com. Mr. Arthur Thompson with us, Chief Executive Officer for the John Birt Society. Now, I interrupted you before when we were talking about the insidiousness of the relationship with China and America. It's fascinating when you start saying, well, look at what they do with human rights, look at what they do with our intellectual property, look at how they manipulate their currency. And then you have people saying, oh, well, the Japanese did the same thing. This is racism. This is xenophobia. When, in fact, you and I are just telling the truth about what's really happening.
Well, that's true. And what I was going for earlier was this Chinese-American investment treaty that's being discussed. Let me show you, demonstrate how this is going to be very insidious if it goes through. What it basically says is, look, the Chinese can come in and invest in our country any way they wish, and Americans can go to China and invest in that country any way they wish. Well, first of all, let's back up and realize who runs our communities. The people who run our communities, directly or indirectly, are the business community itself, the businessmen primarily. And so let's say that the Chinese came in here, and by the way, they have $3.4 trillion in reserves, in dollars, to come in and spend. They come into a community and start buying up businesses. Now, at first, this seems like a good deal. It's a real boon to the economy. But then, over a period of time, who's going to run that local community? It's going to be the owners of those businesses. Now, these are Chinese communist dollars. This is the Chinese communist government with $3.4 trillion. It is not individual entrepreneurs. When Americans go into China or Russia or Bangladesh or wherever it is, the purpose of going there is to make a dollar and to have the bottom line to be more robust. They don't have any agenda. They don't link arms to say, well, we're going to take over the government of China. They don't do that. They're independent. But the Chinese do have an agenda, and they can use that agenda from community to community to community in the United States if they start buying up those communities. And again, they've got over $3 trillion with which to do it. Now, you'd say, well, no American would fall for that. Well, over a period of time, when you're an employee and that sort of thing, and they march you down to the company theater and start indoctrinating you very subtly at first, imbuing you with various aspects of socialism that it can be worked on very subtly, pretty soon the voting pattern changes in those communities. The chambers of commerce start changing because the members of the chamber of commerce are the local business dealers, and on and on and on. So you don't have to fire a shot. All you got to do is be allowed to come in and start buying up the businesses.
So in other words, they're just going to use our own system against us.
Exactly. And that's the problem with freedom. If it's a freedom within ignorance, you've got a serious problem. A freedom can be used against itself if the electorate is ignorant. And that's the whole purpose of the John Birch Society, is to educate and inform. When we talk about free trade, we should really say equitable free trade. And there's a number of things that need to be equitable in order for the trade to be equitable.
Why do we sit back, though, when it comes to China, like you've talked about, that if you want to do business in China, hey, you've got to give them half of your business. You've got to give them all your intellectual property. I mean, Boeing went over there and cut a deal with them, but they had to give them all the technology.
Well, not only the technology, they have actually Boeing, GM, Lockheed, GE, other organizations have actually opened up research and development labs in those countries. General Motors announced just a few years ago that they were moving all of their R&D to China. And so just think about that one for a minute in vis-a-vis defending ourselves. We can't do it if our R&D is in China, and if we ever go to war with China. It's just crazy.
You think it's just ignorance, though, that we have jumped in bed with the Chinese?
Well, it's ignorance in the acquiescence, but it's not ignorance by the people that are doing it. Let me give you an example, and I've got to be very careful here because I don't want to involve somebody who told me this. But there's a major corporation that hired my son-in-law, who is a partner, and by the way, it's an Idaho business, who is a partner in a mold-making company. In other words, they make extrusion molds for primarily the computer industry. And they outbid the Chinese to this major corporation, and middle management wanted to use their company to make their molds. Their molds were cheaper, and another aspect that made them better was they never broke down in production. A part of some of the things that they were doing was actually repairing badly made Chinese molds that caused downtime in the factories. And so they never had any downtime as a result of their molds. The bottom line was a lot better using them. And yet upper management made the decision that, no, we're not going to use this American company anymore. We're going to use Chinese companies regardless of cost. Now, that's a political decision. And when you start to look at the heads of these major corporations, be it Boeing or any others, you will find one or both of the following. They are either members of the Council on Foreign Relations as the heads of those companies, or their corporations are actually corporate members of the Council on Foreign Relations. Now, the Council on Foreign Relations has two goals. One is a one-world government, and two, a government-operated economy. You can go to their website. You can read their research. You can read their books. You can read their seminars. Read their magazine, everything you can about the CFR, and you will discover that this is true. They stand for a one-world government, period. And these corporations are moving us in that direction. It's not ignorance at the top, but it is ignorance at the bottom, the people who acquiesce to it because they're sold a bill of goods.
Arthur Thompson with us, Kevin Miller in the morning here at 580 KIDO. He's the CEO of the John Birch Society. He'll be in town March 18th at the Boise Center. Now, let's get back to a couple other things here. And our friend Alex Jones talks about this. We've talked about this. We've read about it in fiction. Some say it exists. Is there such a thing as the Illuminati?
There was. We cannot document that such a thing, that the Illuminati under that name exists today. There is a lot of information out there that it does, but quite honestly, I can't I can't verify it, and it's a little bit off the edge, to be honest with you. Now, does such an organization exist under a different name? There's too many things that point to the fact that something of that nature exists. You can't have all these individuals arriving at the same place at the same time doing the same thing without such a thing existing. I don't know if you remember the famous quote from Abraham Lincoln where he was talking about Senator Douglas and others fabricating and planning and plotting, actually, to bring about a certain political situation. And he was talking about a building. And paraphrasing it very quickly, he said, it's very difficult to believe that these individuals did not work together to bring about this building if each of them brought a certain board that fitted with these other boards, and they all fitted together with their mortises and tendons and everything else, each in its own place when the event occurred. So it had to have been planned in the past. So this is what we are saying, is that you can't see these things coming together uniformly the way they are without planning, without individuals plotting together to bring them about. So does an organization such as the Illuminati exist? I would say yes. But is it the Illuminati? That's open for conjecture.
More coming up with our great friend Arthur Thompson, Chief Executive Officer for the John Birch Society. Talking about ways how that we can protect ourselves here in America today. Kevin Miller in the morning. Again, you can follow me on Twitter at Kevin Miller Show. Let's get you to work safely and on time at 580 KID.
Sean Hannity, weekdays at 3. Now, back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
580 KIDO, Arthur Thompson with us, Chief Executive Officer for the John Birch Society. We appreciate you being here with us, sir.
Well, it's my pleasure. By the way, if anybody wants any more information on these things, they can go to JBS, like John Birch Society, jbs.org. And you'll find all sorts of information there, all documented, et cetera.
So do we in the Northwest, we in Idaho, are we blessed because we're kind of sheltered from what we see in other parts of the country?
No. You're blessed because enough good people in your state have made it their business to educate their fellow neighbors, the peer groups, the opinion molders in your state. If you remember correctly, it was about, 30 years ago that you had Frank Church?
Yep.
And Frank Church was a real problem when it comes to what we're addressing today on the air. Your governor was the same way. Much has changed in Idaho simply because of the educational efforts of the members of the John Birch Society and others, educating their neighbors, their family, the people at work, the opinion molders in the community, that sort of thing. That's what's changed over a period of time and made Idaho a much better political entity than it was years ago.
Yeah, but even in Idaho, we still have the Chinese influence. We have Chinese nationals here. Now, I just wonder, you know, we have this illusion, I guess, sir, that we are protected from the outside world. But if you control the NSA, you control the satellites and the drones, you pretty much control everything.
If you control the power plant, you do too.
That's a good point.
And so the thing is that there are various things that need to be done in order to control, society. And that is primarily the biggest problem that most people don't realize. If you read Karl Marx, you'll see that he didn't really he didn't really call for revolution per se. What he called for was social revolution. In other words, to change society, because the government is reflective of the society. He knew that you had to change society first before you could have communism. So that's everything that they do is aimed at changing society. And so that's what you have to concentrate on in your work, to bring up society into a more moral level, educate people more on the original intent and principles behind the Constitution of the United States, Declaration of Independence, and that kind of thing. They're not being taught in the schools. Parents may think so, but I think that if they would look at the textbooks that they that the children bring home in those areas, they would be very shocked. I remember, just to give you an idea, I remember back in the 70s, and I don't remember the name of the book, but it was used in one of the northern Idaho schools. A parent showed it to me. He says, this is how they're portraying the Second Amendment. And this is almost an exact quote. The people, and this was written as if it was the actual language. This is how it was taught to the kids. This is the actual language of the amendment. The people of the United States have the right to keep and bear arms, but Congress has the right to regulate them. That's what they said the Second Amendment was.
Wow.
Yeah. And so for 40 years, that sort of thing has been taught in the public schools.
Well, Mr. Thompson, we appreciate you coming in and giving us the insight. You're going to be in Boise, Boise Convention Center, March 18th at 7, jbs.org. We appreciate it, sir. Thank you. 580KIDO, Kevin Miller in the morning. Fox News is next. Stay here, stay informed. You're listening to Kevin Miller, 580KIDO.
KIDO Napa.